eating, responsible eating, responsible eating and living.
Good evening. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to Ask a Vegan. Thanks for joining me tonight. Whew, it's been such a busy week. Last weekend, I didn't do the show because I was at the Veggie Pride Parade in New York City, in Union Square, Manhattan. And it was an incredible event. Went on all day. The weather turned out wonderful. It was supposed to be raining and thunderstorming, and I think we only just got a little smattering of moisture, but for most of the day it was really perfect. And such a wonderful thing to be around people who think like you, and all of a sudden you're in the majority. Certainly things have gotten better over the decades where more people have been interested in vegetarian diets, vegan diets. It's certainly becoming more hip and popular and trendy. Celebrities are doing it. Politicians are doing it. And all of the rest of us are getting on board. And that's great. We've got a long way to go. But at the Veggie Pride Parade, it was really wonderful to be around so many people that I admire and respect. I met a lot of new people. And the funny thing is, gosh, I don't know, some 20 years ago when I first really started getting loud about being a vegan diet, I really thought I knew everybody who was vegan. And you know, whether I did or not, I thought I did. But now, there are so many people who are vegan. And what was great about this event was so many people came up to our table. We had a table at Responsible Eating and Living. And they said, I'm on my way to being vegan. I'm working at being vegan. I'm near vegan. I just became vegan. And this is really, really exciting. So I got all energized. Now, I gave a talk. And if you haven't seen it yet, I really hope you visit responsibleeatingandliving.com. On the front page, you can watch my talk at the Veggie Pride Parade. I was really energized and I enjoyed sharing the things that are most important about food, the things that are most important to me. It's such a simple message, and yet I see so many people struggling today. And if I could just Vulcan mind meld or something with everyone, I really think it would be such a happy place. You know, so many people are struggling with weight and obesity, and I know it's not easy. There have been a gazillion books written on the subject about dieting, and it's just getting harder and harder. And yet, if you can just make that shift, take off the veil, and open the door to what healthy plant foods can do to you, makes life so much easier, I think. So Veggie Pride Parade was a celebration and really, really a great day. And we came home pretty exhausted. My mom used to say the fresh air, it knocks you out. And I don't know that I agree with that, because being outdoors is so important, and breathing the air outdoors, even city air, is better than being indoors. There are studies about that. So fresh air is really important, but being on all day is tiring, and I was certainly on and up. So I'm looking forward to the Veggie Pride Parade next year. There are Veggie Pride Parades going on all over the country. What's really fascinating, I know I've mentioned this before, but lots of things are worth repeating, right? So the Veggie Pride Parade started in Paris about 10 years ago, and that was always interesting to me because it was literally the vegetarians coming out of the closet. And it's hard, as you probably can imagine, for French people to forego meat and cheese, the culinary capital of the world. So it's hard for people. And so they came out of the closet. They had their Veggie Pride Parade. And it's been going on ever since. And it's spreading all around. And I know that there have been some in different countries in Europe, and now there's one in Toronto and in Chicago and in Los Angeles and in Manhattan. This is a great thing, and it's just really a fun event. I've been thinking about, I'm always thinking about food, and I'm always thinking about how to help people move over to a plant-based diet and what kind of imagery or thoughts. We all need different triggers to understand things. Some people respond more to visual images. Some people respond more to audio images. And I'm always trying to figure out clever little things to get people to realize the power of plant foods and to really understand the horrors that are going on today with animals in factory farms and what's going on with the environment. And so I started thinking about smoking. Maybe some of you have made this parallel, but think about this. In 1964, gosh, that sounds like a long time ago, and it was a long time ago. What was it, 58 years ago? Long time ago. 48 years ago. Hello, math. 48 years ago. All right. Anyway, it was a long time ago. And what happened? The Surgeon General, United States Surgeon General at that time, put out a report, and it was based on over 7,000 medical studies on smoking. And the report came out and said cigarette smoking may cause lung cancer, emphysema, and other diseases. And it was groundbreaking because nobody was really talking about how detrimental smoking was before this. And it led to labeling of cigarette packages. It led to anti-smoking advertising campaigns. And it also led to making advertising of smoking illegal in different media. It wasn't allowed in television, and then it wasn't allowed in magazines. And don't you love the Mr. Softy ice cream music in the background? They tend to come around more and more and more in my neighborhood during the nice weather. We call it our theme song here at home. Anyway, my dream is that one day Mr. Softy and all ice cream trucks will distribute plant-based happy frozen desserts rather than frozen desserts based on animal secretions. But I digress. Back to smoking. In the 30s, 40s, and 50s, doctors were actually quoted as saying cigarette smoking was healthy in medical journals and in advertising. And then the tide turned. The Surgeon General came out and said smoking wasn't healthy. And over time, public opinion changed and advertising changed. And I really think this is what really educated us. The advertising, the media. To me, public opinion, the public consciousness is so molded by the advertising that is all around us. For most people, there are really a small amount of people who are not affected by the advertising that's around us and think somewhat independently. But we are all molded by society. And so what happened? Well, in 1964, almost 50% of the population was smoking. 50%. I think it was a little less for women, a little more for men, but very close to 50%. Almost one out of two people. And then in 2012, it's now one in five, 20% of the population, one in five people smoke today. Now, is that a lot? Is that, in some ways I think, wow, that's amazing that over time all of these different anti-smoking campaigns were effective. In other ways, I think, were they effective enough? It's really hard to say. And then, of course, this is only in the United States. Outside of the United States, especially in developing nations, smoking is on the rise. A lot of countries don't have the regulations that we do here in the United States. And as a result, they're still being affected by an image that makes smoking look popular. And it's devastating to health, and not only for lung cancer and emphysema, but all those chronic diseases, it makes you more susceptible. It increases the risk of heart disease and other cancers, everything. Okay, we know smoking is bad. What's my point? The point is that the standard American diet, the SAD diet, SAD, standard American diet, is deadlier than smoking. Yeah. So our diet today, our food system, is killing us or causing most Americans to die prematurely and really cause a burden on our healthcare system and make things rather unpleasant for people. So what to do? You've probably heard in the news this whole uproar on what's going on in New York City with Mayor Bloomberg regarding soda. So, on May 31st, Mayor Bloomberg announced a ban on the sales of sugary drinks larger than 16 ounces in restaurants, delis, sports arenas, and movie theaters. And people are going nuts over this because here in the United States of America, it's all about freedom and free choice. And how is it that some guy can come along and tell us what we can't drink? And I think most people are missing the point entirely. Number one, we don't have free choice. We are all so heavily marketed that we don't even know what we're doing when we choose certain products. We are marketed to choose certain products. There's all kinds of things going on in our subconscious because of marketing. There are studies on our brains. Neuroscience goes on to figure out how to get us to turn the corner at a certain moment and buy some fast food, some junk food, a big soda, whatever it is. And it has a tremendous control over our society. And so, yes, we do need regulation. We need regulation so that healthy, nutritious foods get all the support they can possibly get through subsidies, through tax breaks. Organic, locally grown, fresh produce should be accessible to everyone in this country. Let me say that again. Organic, locally grown, fresh, nutritious plant foods should be accessible to everyone in this country. You shouldn't have to travel very far in order to get healthy food. And some areas of the United States called food deserts, people do not have access to grocery stores. All they have access to are convenience stores like 7-Eleven and fast food restaurants with dollar meals, with inexpensive meals. And so that's what they choose. It's not working. And the problem is that our food system supports unhealthy food. Our food system supports, through tax subsidies that we pay for, our food system supports unhealthy food. And that enables the corporations that promote these unhealthy foods, that gives them, they have all kinds of tax breaks enabling them to profit and afford advertising, billions of dollars in advertising to promote their unhealthy products. And yet, locally grown farmers, do you ever see advertising for locally grown plant foods, broccoli and kale? You never see advertisements for those foods. There's no budget for it. And yet, if we continue to see very attractive, gorgeous, happy-looking people eating all kinds of fresh-looking, nutritious plant foods, steamed kale and kale salads and broccoli pasta salads, the list is endless of healthy foods, rather than seeing someone bite into a triple-decker burger with cheese and bacon and a side of fries and a thick shake, we can see people biting into healthy, delicious food, nutritious food, food that isn't going to cause chronic diseases, and with images of them having a good time and partying and laughing. That, I believe, is really all that we need to get people eating healthy. But I'm alone. So we have to enable our communities to afford this type of promotion. I always say that we cannot rely on our politicians and we cannot rely on our government to make these changes. What happens is there's a small group of people that start making change and start promoting the change, and then it swells and then it grows, and then these people start making more noise and they start supporting certain products that support whatever it is that they're about, and then there's a certain number, and it really depends on the issue what it is, but there's a certain number of people, 10%, 20%, that start promoting a certain issue, and then the government pays attention, and then they start changing laws. But I don't know any instance, I mean, it might be rare, where they have actually made policy changes without individuals recommending the change. It has to start with you. It has to start with me. I'm thinking of that song. Let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. It's the same thing. Let there be healthy food on earth and let it begin with me. And so back to this soda thing. Yeah, we need regulation. It needs to be difficult. It needs to be expensive. People can have access to unhealthy food if they want to, but at a price. Because right now, the way our food system is set up, totally unbalanced, totally unfair, favoring unhealthy sugary foods, it's not working for us. And we need these regulations to shift the balance and make healthy, nutritious foods more affordable, more attractive. And let's see what happens. Why shouldn't we want health and longevity and feeling good for all Americans? Look, if you want to take drugs, fine. If you want to smoke pot or drop acid or smoke cigarettes or eat all kinds of unhealthy junk foods, you have that right. Some of those might be illegal substances, but you can really do whatever you want. I remember when I lived in France and I was learning about the legal system in one of my language programs, there's a law in the books that pretty much allows the French people to do whatever they want as long as it doesn't endanger their life in that moment. So that means that people can drug themselves or do whatever they want. But if they're about to commit suicide or something, then someone can intervene. But all that other stuff, they don't care. Do whatever you want. As long as you're not hurting anyone else. And so that brings up an interesting point because, sure, if you want to drink alcoholic beverages, the best thing to do is do it in a place where you know you don't have to drive, right? So have a party, drink some alcohol, but don't get in a car. The same thing can apply to healthy food, but you have to think about what the impacts are. if you're an adult and you have children and you're feeding yourself unhealthy food, knowingly or unknowingly, and you're feeding the same unhealthy food to your children, well, now it's a different issue because you're not just impacting yourself. You're impacting negatively other people. So does that mean we should have laws that tell people what to feed their children? No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is healthy, nutritious food needs to be accessible and affordable. And luxury items, food that is not healthy, should be not as accessible, not as easy to reach. And if we want to tax some of those foods, I'm all for it, because ultimately when people get sick because of an unhealthy diet, insurance covers their health care or we pay for the health care. And right now we can't afford it. Oh, yes. Welcome to Ask a Vegan.
Hi, I just want to tell you that you're not alone. I've been listening to your program, and I think it's fantastic. And I believe in much of what it is that you're talking about. So keep going.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks for your support.
Yeah, and I just really enjoy your show, and I really wanted to let you know that you're not alone.
No one is alone, truly. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was fun, wasn't it? Yes, it was. Let's see, I got a disconnect here. Very good. And back on soda with this new regulation about soda. So I've read and I've heard from people saying that they don't like to drink water and they don't know what to drink. Other than soda, what do you do? Well, first, you have to recognize that soda is not a healthy drink, okay? Once you do that, you're going to be more open and receptive to alternatives. And it's not just the sugar in soda. This is sugary soda and diet soda. Carbonated beverages that have phosphoric acid in them, like the Coke beverages and many of the other sodas, are really rough on our digestive systems. It gives a very acidic background. And if you've heard about acid and alkaline balances in the body, when we talk about the chemistry of the body, there's a neutral point, a pH of 7, which is called neutral. And when there's a pH of greater than 7, it's considered a basic or alkaline. Less than 7, it's acidic. And this is measuring the hydrogen and hydroxy atom molecules in the body, in the blood, in the urine, in our bodily fluids. And we really need a slightly alkaline background. And when we drink sodas, it makes our bodies acidic. Not a good thing, because that leaves a background for disease. Okay, convinced yet? Sodas are really not a great thing to drink. So what to drink? The most likely thing is water. Water that's clean. And there's a whole movement now against bottled water, because bottled water really uses up way more water than what's in the bottle. It's a really wasteful, environmentally unfriendly process to put water in plastic bottles. The other problem, there are a number of problems. If those plastic bottles ever get warm or hot, then some of the unhealthy toxins from the plastic can leach into the water. You don't want that. And then the other thing is this whole concept of privatization of a natural resource, water, which everyone should be entitled to. Everyone should be entitled to water to drink without having to pay for it. And yet when we're buying bottled water, we're paying for it. And so there are those that believe that we shouldn't be buying bottled water. We should be supporting the whole free water, tap water concept in order that we keep water free. There have been some really devastating stories that have happened in developing nations when the water supply for the country became privatized. It becomes very expensive. It's not a good thing. And so what we like to do here at home is we use tap water and we filter it, we distill it, and then we vitalize it, which puts some minerals back into the water after distilling it. It's a process, takes some time. I don't mind doing it because the water ends up being great. And I like knowing that I have clear, cool, delicious, clean water. And then we put it in glass bottles that we've saved from occasionally when we buy a carbonated beverage. There are some seltzer waters that are lightly sweetened with fruit juice. And lots of different things like that. And so when we buy those things for an event or an occasion, then we save the bottles and use them for water, which is great. Okay, so that's clean water. But then you can make a gazillion different flavors of teas, and those teas can have caffeine or not have caffeine, and you can bottle them in glass bottles and refrigerate them, and they're ready when you're thirsty. There's black tea, all kinds of green teas, white teas. You can mix them with other things like fruit juice. We have a number of different black teas in the house. One of them I really like is has some dried berries in them, and it's great for an iced tea. There's peppermint tea. There's a whole slew of herbal teas, splashed with a little fruit juice, lemon, lime. There's a gazillion varieties. There must be something that is refreshing and satisfying for everyone. You know, there's even a variety of teas that taste like root beer, sassafras tea. So if you like drinking a root beer tea, you can make an iced tea that tastes like root beer. And, you know, there are probably some Coke flavors, if you really like that Coke flavor, that you can add that doesn't have sugar in it. Okay, now, something to think about. There's so many things that are problematic about soda, but one of the biggest issues, and the issue that Mayor Bloomberg here in New York is fighting against, is sugar. And the problem is that on the average in America, 1 out of 3 adults is obese. Is that crazy? But that's the statistic right now, and I believe it's more problematic in New York City than most other cities. Sugar is in everything these days. People don't even realize because people aren't making their own food. Sugar is in sauces and, okay, obviously cookies and cakes, but breads. And when you drink a soda, there's tons of sugar in those drinks. And so when you're having a 16-ounce drink, you're getting way too much soda. And it's such an easy way to put an excessive amount of calories in your body. Okay, so that's basically it on soda and drinks. I used to like, I remember the first time I was traveling in Israel, and that's a country that can get pretty hot and pretty dry. There are certain areas, I remember traveling there and people were telling me, you must keep drinking because you will get dehydrated. And fluids are really, really important because the air was really dry and it was really hot. And they had, in many, many places, this drink, which was really just diluted orange juice. It was mostly water with a little orange juice in it, and it was so refreshing. I personally can't drink orange juice full strength. I find it's very unsettling, but just a splash in water is really, really delicious. I had a question recently from someone who is new to being vegan, and his question was, you know, what's the difference between a raw diet and a cooked diet? And brought a smile to my face, because there are many, many different kinds of vegan diets, and a subset of all the different vegan diets is raw diets. So I thought I might just go into a little bit of detail about the different shades of vegan. So vegan, of course, means no animal products, no meat, no fish, no chicken, no dairy, no eggs, and no honey, although honey is sort of a gray area with people, and I don't want to dwell on it. It's not that big of a detail. But you can be a macrobiotic vegan, where you're eating primarily things like brown rice and beans and some seaweed, fermented foods, tempeh, but mostly cooked food, some steamed greens. Then you could be a junk food vegan. You could be eating a lot of soy ice cream shakes and Numinos, those are those vegan Oreo cookies, and potato chips and French fries, and be on a really unhealthy junk food vegan diet, very possible. Then there are diets that are very intense on dark leafy green vegetables, and that's what I really like. And then there are some people that believe that consuming a lot of starch in whole grains is the best way to go. Some people really limit their fat intake and try and get 10% or less of their calories in fat. Other people think that that's not a good thing to do. And then you add to that whether your food is raw or cooked, and there are those that are eating more and more raw food to 100% raw food. And is there a benefit in that? There's really no science at this point that says whether a completely raw, uncooked diet is more beneficial, but we do know that it is very important to eat raw foods. So if it's something that works for you and you feel like you want to do it, great. The thing that I find kind of amusing is in the raw food world, eating fresh fruits and salads makes a lot of sense to me, or even blended salads where you make a cucumber avocado soup or a gazpacho soup, all different kinds of vegetables that are blended, or nut and seed pâtés, really delicious. But when people start dehydrating food and taking the water out of food to simulate foods that have been baked or cooked, then it starts to not make much sense to me, because one of the important factors of raw food is that the food is filled with water and is very hydrating. And when we dehydrate, we kind of take those things, the important, valuable things, out of the raw food. So somebody just asked the question, what qualifies being obese, because I mentioned that about 30% of Americans today are considered obese. And here's the basic definition. Obesity increases the likelihood of diseases like heart disease, type 2 diabetes, all kinds of cancers. It's, of course, most commonly caused by a combination of excessive food energy intake, lack of physical energy, genetic susceptibility. The textbooks, the things you read on websites will say that there are a few cases that are caused by genes. I'm not sure about that, but you'll hear that there are genes for obesity. And certainly medications can cause people to put on weight. And there's also the issue of metabolism. If you have a slow metabolism or a fast metabolism, but basically it has to do with your body mass index, and there's a table for body mass index where it tells you, based on your height and your weight, whether you're the right weight, whether you're overweight, or whether you're obese. And so the classifications go very simply. BMI classification, so you're considered underweight if you have a BMI of 18.5 or less. Normal weight is 18.5 to 24.99. Overweight is 25 to 29.99. And then there are three levels of obesity. There's class 1, which is 30 to 34.99. Class 2, which is 35 to 39.99. And 40 or greater is morbid obesity. So there are just definitions based on your weight and height for obesity. But the problem is, you know, if people, for me personally, it's not about what people look like to me. I want people to feel great. I want people to have energy, do whatever it is that they want to do, and really have low risk of chronic disease, because that's not fun. People should be experiencing joy. And personally, in my opinion, I believe that healthy plant foods, eating a healthy plant-based diet, is the way to lowering your risk of chronic diseases and increasing the probability of feeling good, having mental clarity, and enjoying life. Okay. Summer is on. Almost. Well, we're in June. I'm rushing things, I guess. But in some ways, it's been feeling like summer the last few days. But we do have a few weeks before summer. Okay, so let's get ready for summer. One of the things that I like to do is make summer rolls. So you've heard of summer rolls. Sometimes they're called spring rolls, but I like to call them summer rolls because spring rolls can be confusing. Spring rolls can imply, in my mind, that they may be fried or they may not be cooked. Summer rolls, I probably should check this, but from what I've seen on menus, summer rolls are not fried or cooked, so I call them summer rolls. But basically, they're rolls, appetizers. They could be a side or a main dish too, but basically it's vegetables rolled in a rice paper. Now, maybe you've never made a roll like this before, but if you go to an Asian market, and some health food stores have them too, you can buy packages of these round, very thin circles. You can get a stack of maybe 50 of them in a package. They're almost clear. They're somewhat translucent. It's an off-white color, and they're really thin, and they crack really easily. But when you put them in water for 30 seconds to a minute, they soften up, and then they become rollable. And it takes a little bit of skill to manipulate them, and you can probably find some YouTube videos and websites that show in great detail how to make a summer roll. But they're great. I remember the first time I ever had a summer roll was in a Vietnamese restaurant in Germany, believe it or not. And I just thought the combinations of flavors were so incredible and so fresh. And then I learned how to make them. The thing is, when I haven't made them for a while, it gets a little challenging and I forget, because it does take a little bit of skill. And one of the tricks is not to put too much stuff inside the rice paper. So rice paper is a really great thing to have around. It doesn't go bad. You can keep them in the cupboard for a long time, and then when you're ready, you just rehydrate them, and they're ready to roll. We recently had some friends over for dinner, and I just want to give a sample of what a great summer menu can be. So I had made the summer rolls, and what's nice is they are a little labor intensive. They do take some time to make, but you can do it sometime during the day before your event and do it with some music playing, do it when you're relaxed, and just make it a meditative moment to roll up your veggies and make your summer rolls. And then you can put them on a plate, cover them with some plastic wrap, and put them in the refrigerator until you're ready to serve them. So we had the summer rolls. I like to make a dip of peanut butter, a little agave, and some hot sauce. And of course, the ratio can vary whether you like your peanut sauce sweet or spicy. But you can make a variety of different dips. I've had just a simple rice vinegar with a little splash of soy sauce. There's lots of different ways to serve summer rolls. That's just the way I prefer it. And then in addition, we made a big salad and served a platter of different, I want to call them lunch meats, to put on sandwich bread to make so that people can make sandwiches. And so we had the tofurkey oven roasted vegan turkey slices. You can get them in most supermarkets today. It's not the healthiest product because it does have a lot of sodium. It's soy and gluten based, but it's a fun thing to have on occasion to make some fun sandwiches, especially in the summertime. And then we had some sliced baked tofu and a variety of different breads. I have some great bread recipes. If you like making bread, I do. I don't think it's hard to do, and it really isn't that time consuming. Making bread, the big time part of it is letting it rise, and you don't have to be there when it's rising. You just have to make the dough, set it aside, and let it rise. I've got some great gluten-free yeast breads as well as wheat-based breads. So I made a bunch of different loaves for the sandwiches, gluten-free and wheat-based, and then you can put different condiments like Dijon mustard or yellow mustard and your favorite vegan mayonnaise. There are lots of different ones out there, fortunately, or you can make your own too. And then this is one of my favorite things. I'm not a chip eater because I find that chips are usually high in salt and they're junky food. But we do like to buy corn tortillas. And what's in your corn tortilla? Our corn tortillas are made with corn. Corn, a little salt and water, and that's it. When you're buying corn tortillas, please read the ingredients. There are some that have maybe 50 ingredients on it, including cellulose. And those aren't good corn tortillas. Corn tortillas should be made of corn. Okay, so we buy corn tortillas. It's getting to be a little tongue twister. We buy corn tortillas and cut them up into triangles and then bake them in the oven. And they become homemade corn chips. And these are great. We make our own guacamole, and you can use these homemade corn chips to dip in guacamole. And this is delicious. It's just corn. Nothing wrong with it. And so this was a sample. This was a recent dinner party we had. Summer roll salad, the quote cold cuts or the baked tofu and the tofurkey, the bread and the condiments and the chips and the guacamole. It was delicious. And I had one friend who just couldn't stop mmming and cooing because all of the ingredients we use were organic and fresh. And you can taste the difference. Really satisfying food. In fact, I'm getting hungry. Okay, back to rice paper, because there were a lot of things I wanted to talk about with rice paper. So maybe you've bought your rice paper, and a lot of the, they're so fragile when they're hard that they break. And so I started collecting the leftover unusable pieces of rice paper. And I don't like to waste things. And so I thought, it's just rice noodle. So I made a vegetable soup. And instead of adding a little noodle like I like to do, usually I add a glass noodle or a rice noodle to my vegetable soups, I added the rice paper. And so I made this broken rice paper noodle soup. And the recipe is up on responsibleeatingandliving.com, and I hope you try it. Of course, you don't have to use broken rice paper. You can use noodle instead of, but I thought it was a fun thing to do, and I really liked, I liked the look of the soup. I liked the texture of the soup. But here's something. This Wednesday on my show, It's All About Food, when I interview different experts in the plant-based movement, I will be talking at 3:30 in the second part of the show to Roberto Martin. Roberto Martin, who happens to be the private chef of Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi. He has a new cookbook out called Vegan Cooking for Carnivores. It's kind of an amusing title because none of us are carnivores. All humans are omnivores. We are designed to eat animals and plants. No human was designed not to eat plants, and that would make us, well, if we were primarily supposed to eat meat, we would be carnivores. There are some animals that just eat animals, and they are carnivores. That's not what a human is. But anyway, there are some people that like to call themselves carnivores because they like their meat so much. And so he wrote this cookbook, Vegan Cooking for Carnivores. And what was interesting to me was, in reading the book, was that he was not a vegan when he went to work for Ellen and Portia. But in the journey of learning how to make these foods and why people would want to eat these foods, he became vegan, or at least near vegan, which is a really wonderful thing. I have looked at his cookbook. It's really a lovely cookbook. There's lots of recipes in it that we've been eating for a very long time. Not his recipes, but similar versions. Very classic American-style food, sandwiches and soups and salads. Beautiful pictures. There's one recipe in here that I wanted to mention because it is unique, and it has to do with rice paper. So he made for Oprah Winfrey when she was coming to visit with Ellen and Portia something similar to fried chicken. And he used gardein, which is a plant-based meat analog. It's made mostly from pea protein and gluten and a variety of flavorings. And he used the chicken variety of this product, gardein, and seasoned it up and rolled it in rice paper and used the rice paper like a skin and then breaded it and fried it and made something very similar to a fried chicken. And I thought this was genius. Now, I'm not a big fan of fried food, but I thought it was a really clever dish, especially for people that want to transition and really like their fried chicken. You know, I wanted to clarify, when I'm talking about being carnivore versus omnivore, we are designed, we are able, capable of eating meat and vegetables, plant foods, but we are learning through science that a plant-based diet is the ideal. So we are able to eat animal foods, but we don't want to eat a lot of them. And there's no clear science at this point that says that a diet, I want to rephrase that. What the science tells us now is that a primarily plant-based diet is the healthiest diet. And that if we add a little bit of animal protein or not, we don't know if there's a benefit of one versus the other when we're talking about 10% of calories or so in the diet. But the bulk of the diet needs to be healthy plant foods, and all the science points to that as being the most beneficial healthy diet for humans. Yeah, so rice paper is really great, and I recommend trying it out. So we have just about 10 minutes left. I wanted to talk a moment about linden trees. Do you know about the linden tree? We have several around our building, and I'm very excited right now because for about 1 week in typically June, sometimes it's last few years it came early at the end of May, but it's usually sometime in June, and it could be any day now. The linden tree blooms. It blooms for about a week, and the fragrance is intoxicating. There's one right next to our terrace, and I just can't wait for it to bloom. But I've been talking about it, and I've been learning that the linden flowers not just smell so wonderfully. They don't just have a fabulous fragrance, but I've been learning from people that aren't Native Americans or people that are from the United States. I've been learning from people that come from other countries where they still use a lot of herbal remedies for things, that the linden flowers, the flowers itself, have been used for colds, coughs, fever, infection, inflammation, high blood pressure, headaches, and as a diuretic, all kinds of health-promoting properties. And so the flowers can be steeped as a tea and taken for all kinds of things. And I thought that was really interesting. And I didn't know that about the lovely, fragrant linden tree. And then someone recently asked me about hibiscus. Now, you might be familiar with hibiscus as a tea. So the hibiscus leaves that grow from the hibiscus, is it a tree or a bush, are really lovely and used for tea. And it makes a very tart, red, caffeine-free tea. And the tea is pretty popular. It's also a diuretic. It contains lots of vitamin C and minerals and does all kinds of wonderful things. It's helps people diet. And I also read that it lowers blood pressure with people that have hypertension. So hibiscus can make a really nice, we were talking about soda alternatives, and this is a really nice tea, especially if you ice it. It's good with an extra squeeze of a citrus fruit in it. But what somebody asked me about recently was hibiscus tacos. And I have to say, I haven't tried them, but once you make tea from the leaves, you can take the leaves themselves and saute them up with onions and peppers and your favorite Mexican flavorings like cumin and turmeric and hot peppers and make an alternative to taco meat. And it's something that's popular in Jamaica and in Mexico. And it's delicious and nutritious and not wasteful because you can have the tea and then you can use the leaves and put it in a dish for filling. And keep in mind when we're talking about Bloomberg and this new ruling against soda and sugar, there are lots of different sugars out on the market. And so I don't really encourage eating lots of sugar, but it's okay in small amounts, and we deserve a treat or just a little bit to lightly sweeten things. So there are so many different alternatives, and dates are really wonderful. You know, something I love to do is to take dried fruit like raisins or dates, soak them in water. And then the water itself is very sweet, and you can add that to your tea. and also have the dried fruit. So it's lovely, it's natural, and that's a nice sweetness. Or there are so many different sugars out on the market today. Most sugar is based from cane juice, sugar cane. There's beet sugar. There's a whole variety of different foods to get sugar from. Basically, they're all the same. So you want to watch your intake of sugar. The best way to get sweetness from food is to eat whole foods. Watermelon is a great one right now because it's starting to come in season. It's lovely, it's sweet, and all those other fruits are the best way. You know, we're designed to eat fruit, and so we like sugary things. And then when we get used to foods that are hyper sweet or hyper sugary, that's when the problem starts. In fact, sometime, if you can pick up a watermelon that's really inexpensive, sometimes when at the height of the season, they're really inexpensive, like 20 cents a pound or something crazy, and you can buy a big watermelon and you think, I can't eat all of this. But what you can do is blend it and make watermelon juice or a watermelon smoothie. And something I like to do is, if I can't eat it all, I can pour it in ice cube trays or ice pop molds and make frozen watermelon cubes and pops, and really, really refreshing to have at some point when maybe the watermelon isn't as inexpensive or in season. Really great. But watermelon is really, really a great drink, and especially the white part of the watermelon close to the rind, there's a lot of good nutrients in there, so you can add that to your drink, and that's a little bitter, but I like it because it helps balance out the extra sugariness of the watermelon. Wow. Somehow I have managed to talk about food for another hour. I wanted to remind you to visit responsibleeatingandliving.com. Obviously, you're there listening to the show, but there are so many different things that we have going on the website. Great recipes. And please, if you haven't checked out my talk at the Veggie Pride Parade, and this week on my It's All About Food show, I'm really excited to be talking about Roberto Martin, so I hope you can join me for that. Anything else? Yes, you can give me your comments and questions at info@realmeals.org anytime during the week. I love to hear from you and love to get some questions and comments about all kinds of things. I learn a lot from everybody, so please let me know about some of your secrets with food. My other guest on Wednesday, I'm looking for her book that I just finished reading, but it's all about The Green Food Print by Linda Rybell. That'll be at 3 o'clock, and then Roberto Martin at 3:30. All right, thanks for listening. I'm going to wrap things up now with the real jingle.
R-E-A-L.
Responsible eating and living.
R-E-A-L.
Real's good for the planet, the inhabitants who need sound advice on the right thing to do.
When it comes to good health,
we need facts that are true. To choose what to eat and save the planet too. That's responsible eating and living.
You'll find the real tools for you.
Real!